men who have sex with men can donate blood. Ryerson, Egerton Ryerson, gets his name stripped from the university that was named after him for many, many years. And the University of Waterloo discriminates against anyone who is not a woman, who is not non-binary. Hi, I'm Michael Thiessen, driving in my car to talk to you about these important things. And that guy there is Tim Tyso. I'm not going to have to look at his ugly face today. And this is Liberty Dispatch.
Ladies and gentlemen, we may be approaching a fateful hour.
Bonhoeffer spoke by radio to a national audience. He delivered one of the first public criticisms of the new chancellor.
Never give in. Never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense.
Welcome to Liberty Dispatch, broadcasting across enemy lines into the Canadian culture war. From home, from abroad, on the road, in the office. Mike, thanks for making time for us today. Please remember to subscribe on the podcast wherever you get it. Don't forget to subscribe on our Rumble channel at libertycoalitioncanada.com. Do all the things that you need to do. No, we seriously appreciate all of your support. Thank you again, listeners, and please help spread the show. Also, we also are reminding you and asking you to check out our website and consider becoming a monthly financial partner at the donate tab on libertycoalitioncanada.com. Getting right to it. Men who have sex with men can donate blood in Canada. This from Justin Trudeau in a press conference yesterday, well, whatever day it was, it would have been Thursday in Canada. Justin Trudeau said it was long coming. It was long overdue. It should have happened 15 years ago. And essentially, this was the end of a, quote, discriminatory practice. He said that the Canadian government, this was one of their plans, their campaign promises. I don't know if you caught that, Mike, from the campaign trail, but this is apparently one of the great things that Canadians were waiting for, was this blanket discriminatory practice of banning men who have sex with men, otherwise known as homosexuals or sodomites, depending on where you come from donating blood. And apparently this was such a priority that the Liberal government put $5 million into over a dozen studies to make sure that they would not end this, quote, discriminatory practice. What are your thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, there's a few things that we should just quickly hone in on. First of all, how dare the Prime Minister define what a man is in a world where apparent gender and sex are fluid and changeable? How is it that he could say so definitively something so biologically accurate? The second thing is, in the announcement, he made it very clear that the Canadian government or the Canadian Blood Services had asked for further study. Now, he didn't talk about the results of those studies, did not talk about whether or not those studies determined that there was a greater risk, which of course is why this discriminatory behavior is in place. The reality of it is discrimination is perfectly fine. Called discernment when you are discriminating against something that is immoral or dangerous. So I would discriminate against, I'm driving under a bridge. If there was a club in my area that said, we're going to have a child bridge jumping club, I would discriminate. I would discern. I would say to my children, unless they've got bouncy castles at the bottom, we're discriminating against that club. That's a dangerous club. While the club of going out and men having sex with men is a known club for having transmitted diseases, which is why, in the same way that we would discriminate against other blood donors who had traveled from another country recently or had a certain vaccination recently. So people have to hear that This is, again, him trying to create a victimhood out of an entire people group or a sexual deviant group. And in reality, we need to discern and discriminate against anybody who have tainted blood.
So this is another way that your worldview often is going to run up against very concrete barriers in the world. So if you live in a fantasy world where you do whatever you want and you ignore God's law and God's principles and you become infected with diseases or you become physically ill or you die as a result of, as you say, this bridge jumping club, you're going to run into physical barriers. And for decades, the Canadian Blood Services have had a blanket ban on homosexuals, active sexual homosexuals, because of the disproportionate infection rate in their blood of sexually transmitted diseases. We know this. This is a scientific principle. And of course, in order to justify the worldview, those who promote it as normal have to erase every standard that would bear comparison to what is right and good. And so they need to destroy, even in the realm where it could risk. And they spent $5 million on studies in order to sort of do scientific backflips to make sure that this could be done safely. So it's erasing the physical world in order that you can live in your fantasy world. That's basically what's going on.
And the question is did they find that it is equally safe?
Can we see those studies, please? My wife is a blood donor recipient. And I'd like to know that if our family ever requires this again, I'd like to see the content of those studies. But that is neither here nor there, because while it is, and I think it's philosophically dishonest to do this sort of thing, it also speaks to the fact that why do men who have sex with men have a right not to be discriminated against in blood donations? Do we have somewhere in our Constitution that says you have the right to donate blood and have it be used in medical procedures? Is that a right? It's sadistic almost to say, I demand that my blood be used in somebody else despite the fact that I live a sexually risky and deviant lifestyle, but I demand that my blood be used in an unsuspecting person's medical transfusion. They don't have the right to know that it's from a man who has sex with men. I mean, it's absurd to put this in terms of rights and discrimination.
Yeah, I think the what you're trying to say there, Tim, is that when we can look at a behavior and say that has inherent risk to it, we ought to be able to respond to that intelligently. And so the other side of this is just, I would like to see those studies. I would like to see, because what's the embedded message? The embedded message is that homosexual behavior is as safe as heterosexual behavior.
Correct. That's right.
When the reality is homosexual behavior is polygamy or polyamorous behavior or multiple partners, however you want to phrase it, is far more, sexual promiscuity is really prevalent in the homosexual community. And
right.
And as well, just the nature of the kind of sex also promotes the spreading of STDs. So the embedded message here is that it's just like anything else.
Yes, yes.
And that is where, without the presentation of those studies to find, now again, look at if the studies find that there is absolutely no difference, I'd be shocked. But number two, it doesn't change the actual reality. They're trying to push a perception that it's exactly the same, and that's just not true.
And
I still want to say, Tim, I want you to comment on men with men. How is it that a prime minister would make such a biologically distinctive statement? People have to hear the idiotic rhetoric going on around all of these issues. He literally couldn't say that without being able to define what a man is and to be able to define what a woman is. Yet, they've made it illegal in our country to say such definitions and counsel people towards those definitions.
Yeah. So I want to make a broader point based on what you just said. I want to introduce our listeners to Poe's Law, P-O-E apostrophe S, Poe's Law. It comes from Nathaniel Poe. This is the idea, the core idea of Poe's Law is that a parody of something extreme can be mistaken for the real thing. And if a real thing sounds extreme enough, it can be mistaken for parody. That is, Justin Trudeau's announcement on Thursday, the Prime Minister of this country stepped up to the microphone and said, "I'm happy to announce that men who have sex with men can donate blood." This is the Prime Minister of our country, and this is the business that he's up to. This is the work that he is doing. This is the portfolios that he is pushing. It is so absurd. And I texted you, Mike, and I said, the Prime Minister is trolling us. And you're like, what, really? And I'm like, no, but he's exercising Poe's Law to hedge himself off from criticism of people like us. And that is that because when he says it so plainly, he's stealing my language. He's stealing the way that I would describe what is otherwise would be euphemisms like homosexuals. He has to go to the biological act to be very specific about what this ban includes. And he's stealing the language, the absurdity of the language he is stealing from my lips in order to basically protect himself from parody. This is the language that I would use if I was reporting on it. And it undercuts our analysis by stating exactly how demented and immoral this policy is in his own announcement. He's fully expanding the demented worldview that he holds in his own announcement, thereby enacting Poe's Law, which I'm still trying to wedge in and find a way to really drive this home, how demented and ridiculous and unscientific and immoral it is. Here we are anyway trying, but Justin Trudeau's making it very difficult to parody or critique the absurdity of his worldview.
So two things there, just to comment on. First of all, I think somewhere in there you said that he is parroting my absurd words. And I'm just going to let you deal with that. Because I don't think he's parroting your absurd words. He is absurdly stating the truth.
Yes.
So,
yes.
So it he says it so sincerely, and it's such an extreme truth that if any type of comedian had have gotten up there and delivered it sarcastically, people would know that that was a joke.
Yes.
But he says it so sincerely that which is so easily a joke is taken, it's all of its absurdity is taken for truth.
Yeah, and he's standing in front of a row of reporters and cameras and cabinet members. I mean, this is the official business of the Canadian government, and this is this giant clown show of absurdity.
Without one person logically putting up their hand and saying, Prime Minister,
are you for
honorable,
real?
Right honorable Prime Minister, please define a man.
Yeah. So,
like, if you define a man, please define a woman. Okay, let's move on from this.
Let's move on.
Everybody, the biggest thing people just need to listen to, they need to listen to the absurdity. They need to listen to what the slight message is. And that is, again, all sexual behaviors are equal.
Yeah. So
you go out and marry 15 women, you marry 15 men, no sexual behavior will have ramifications in the real world. That's the message he's trying to send out. He knows it's ridiculous, but that is what we have when we are speaking absurdity as he is. Go for it.
So 2 days ago, Ryerson University officially changed its name to Toronto, to Toronto Metropolitan University. And this is just something, you know, could fly over the radar for a lot of people because it's another name change. Ryerson has actually changed its names multiple times in the past. Patrice Dutille, who is a professor at Ryerson, wrote in the National Post, erasing Ryerson and the Henry Dundas hoax. So he also comments on how Toronto is has decided that they might be changing the Dundas Street, the name there in Toronto. But his idea is that these are hoaxes, that these are silly, and that this is a silly enterprise. And so I found from the Dorchester Review, he calls it, the article's called The Imbecile Attack on Egerton Ryerson, because this started as much as 12 years ago at Ryerson University. And Dutil is a professor at Ryerson, okay? So I want to be clear about that. He is a professor there, and he's also he's the professor of political studies and others, and he's a very widely published and well-respected academician and writer. And he writes in this article, he says of Egerton Ryerson, he was one of the most influential figures in the history of Upper Canada, and in his day was considered the very paragon of forward-looking, progressive, and inclusive, and a worldly intellectual. He was a beacon of educational reform, a fighter against injustice of all sorts, and a kind and generous man. He was a Methodist minister, as you pointed out, Mike, in our conversations. He pushed for religious equality and has long been celebrated as the founder of Ontario's public school system. So this is a man that we would rightly name an educational institute after. And when Ryerson was formed in 1947, it was as an institution to retrain returning war veterans for a career transition into the public sector. A very noble task for men who are either wounded or have been caught up in war for a generation, and it was a retraining facility to get veterans the skills they needed to participate in the economy. And the natural choice was Egerton Ryerson to name it after, because he championed access to education. He championed equality and the advancement of education all across Canada. So historically, he has been celebrated. He has been a massive architect of public education, and his name is now being stripped from the university because of what is considered his links to the residential school system. And so this began 12 years ago when just sort of cliches and bad writing and research had begun to circulate around the university, calling him, you know, a father of modern genocide and things like this. And these tropes just began to gather steam. And then in the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, which began in 2008, began casting a highly political and sometimes unhistorical shadow on Egerton Ryerson. They made news for suggesting that he was involved in creating the Indian residential schools that existed after the 1970s. This is Patrice... Patrick Dutil writing, quote, "Was it true? No, but no matter, it sounded plausible that an obscure 19th century figure would have a dark side. The flame having caught, Ryerson's University, their Aboriginal Education Council, issued a paper declaring that he had played a defining role in establishing residential schools." So this has been gathering steam for a decade, and it's finally coming to fruition here. They've changed the name, and they are moving in a distinctly new direction as a university. Your initial thoughts, Mike? I have more to say on that. What have you learned about Egerton Ryerson, and how does this go down the pipe?
There's a few things to say here, Tim. Number one, thank you for, you know, your detailed research on that article and bringing up some of the information that we're dialoguing. I always appreciate it when one of us digs deep, and you dug deep really well today. Thank you for that. So the vision that Egerton Ryerson had for school were two stated purposes, and that was that he would develop a virtuous citizen, that educating individuals would allow them to contribute to society, be virtuous citizens, and build a nation. The second reason for educating all children in Canada was that they would grow up in the fear of the Lord, and they would understand the connection between the fear of the Lord and being virtuous citizens. So, on the onset, that puts him at the idea that he wants to greatly affect and help all children. So when you have movements saying every child matters, this is a man who would have believed that and would have promoted those types of things. But now it is actually that movement that is calling him an abuser. Those are my first few thoughts.
Yeah. So as this has become a firebrand, just to say residential schools or indigenous schools, to say that and to have any connection whatsoever has become, it's just, you're dead in the water almost. So you don't even have to prove anything. You just have to prove some tenuous connection to the movement, and you can sort of apply guilt by association or some nefarious undercurrent to the motivations. But Egerton Ryerson was actually well beloved by local First Nations people. He lived with the in the Credit area in Mississauga. He joined their fight to secure a title deed to the lands at the mouth of the Credit River. He stood by them to protect the remaining land base against the ever encroaching British Canadian settlers. And so he worked with them, he fought for them, he stood for their land rights. And in fact, they loved him. At a council fire in December 18, a council fire that would be not a burning church fire, but a council fire. In 1826, the Credit Mississauga adopted the 23-year-old, giving him an Ojibwe name of the well-regarded recently deceased chief of Cheechock, who had belonged to the Eagle Dudum. And so he was beloved and adopted by this tribe. He worked with them and he stood by them. So this idea that he was for cultural genocide or that he wanted to erase their culture, he thought part of his educational mandate would be to help develop agricultural practices that would help sustain the Aboriginal way of life. So his legacy is clearly...
And the reality of it is
go ahead.
There are elements of the residential schools that were clashes of culture, as they continue to be today.
Right.
Worldviews have implications. And with the residential schools, we have areas of documented abuse that all of us would continue to condemn as God-fearing men and women. But there is also this other reality that we have to own, that there was a culture war. Do we promote every worldview, or do we try to build a nation that is built upon Judeo-Christian law that is true justice? And so, for example, like, there is an ongoing battle in our culture right now. It's a very simple one. The Me Too movement says we must believe her. The indigenous way of Canadians telling stories is that we pass down, you know, oral stories are as powerful as other sources of evidence, but that does not hold up in court. You know, God's law says two or three witnesses. We want better pieces of evidence than just an oral transmission of a story. These are actual tensions that we have to deal with.
So, and I want to quote Patrick Dutille one more time, where he summarizes it this way. He says the movement against Ryerson, and this is how you can explain it, belongs to a wider trend to indulge in rage against, quote, white men who dominated Canada's history. That's where the hatred really is. There is a racial hate and a racial bias against white Europeans who had influence, who had money. It doesn't matter whether they used it for good, as Egerton Ryerson did, who stood up for local people's land rights and traditional ways of life and wanted to partner with them in order to help create sustainability as more settlers were coming through from Britain and France and other places. So it doesn't matter whether he actually did good. It's this race rage against white people who had influence. And that is essentially the break that these institutions want to make, that we no longer hold to their worldview. We no longer hold to the moorings that Egerton Ryerson held to. So they create this fake guilt about the residential schools. But the reality is, it's not because of his faults that they want to disconnect from Ryerson. It's because of his character and his worldview. They want to cancel Ryerson not because of the evil things that he did, but because of the good that he represented. Ryerson, along with many other institutions, are making a definitive break, as Justin Trudeau proved in our opening story. They want nothing to do with that which is real, moral, true, beautiful, and good. They want to, and this is Ryerson from their website, they want you to join us as we reimagine the future. A new name is an occasion to come together and write the future how we want to see it. So there is an idea that we are going to take control of our destiny. We are going to erase the paths of the past. We no longer want to be guided by the vision of the people who came before us. We want to chart our own path. We want to write our own future, and we want to do it based on our own laws and our own norms. We're seeing the Canadian Criminal Code rewritten. We're seeing laws rewritten, educational curriculums being rewritten, all along this critical lens, critical race lens. We've talked about it over and over and over again, where nothing establishment can remain. This is a cultural revolution, and it's nothing short of it, and it is a totally unknown future. There's no way to test how this goes except to say that the strongest and most dominant will take center stage, unlike Ryerson, who likely had the means to overrule these tribes and the influence to do so, but instead he went to work protecting them, which is, of course, the Christian approach, not the Marxist approach, which is to dominate by means of propaganda and strength and whoever has the microphone and who can yell the loudest.
It is a rewriting of history, and as you said, Tim, it is rewriting of history where you are defining a man only by his race and only by your evaluation of his character. And what you and I have talked about before we started recording this, Tim, is that these are the same people who are criticizing a man for trying to educate all young adults in Canada with a very specific purpose. And they're saying, no, that's immoral. We have to disassociate with that man because of his whiteness and because of the some of the values that he stood for. Yeah, these same people are trying to tell us that boys can't be boys, girls can't be boys. I mean, girls can't be girls. They're trying to drug our children in order to help them listen better. They're trying to drug our children in order to actually change their sex. If you want to, it is like the worst example of an accuser being utterly vile while pointing the finger at another individual saying, you've got dirt on your face. It's like having a log in your eye.
Almost like that.
And pointing out the speck of dust in another. And except this log is like reeking of venom and putrid slime, and the speck is like the cleanest speck of dust you could imagine stuck in someone's eye. So yeah, you're right, Tim. This is a cultural revolution. And I think the thing that I want to remind our listeners on is it takes leadership, because that's really what they're accusing Ryerson of doing, is leading the people. And they're saying, we don't like the way he led. And you go, okay, that's going to be something to talk about. But in this moment, if Christians will not own their worldview, if they will not say, no, cultural Marxism is immoral, and by faith I walk in the ways of the Lord, you're left with the whole world going the way of the moth. And you brought that up earlier. That's really what's happening. There's no science to transgenderism. There's no science to it. It's all bad academics. And the reality is bad academics leads people to be threatened. The mob feels threatened. The mob won't speak up. The mob just follows along with it. And a few people control the mob. And you're left with a few outliers with Liberty Coalition Canada hats on and our faith in Christ yelling into the wind, wait a minute, you got a really big log. Like, it's not even in one eye. It's like a cyclops log. It's taking up your whole face. Would you just slow down and not ruin our society?
You know, speaking of discrimination and disassociation, our last story from the dailymail.com, Canadian University advertises for a tenure track research chair in its Faculty of Environment, but only women or people who identify as transgender, non-binary, or two-spirited are allowed to apply. The position pays $90,000 and $120,000 a year, and it is only open to women. This is from Waterloo's own release. The call is open to qualify only to qualified individuals who self-identify as women, transgender, non-binary, or two-spirit. If you want to be on this, to have this research chair, this tenure track research chair in the Department of the Environment
at University of Waterloo. I don't know if it's the first time in history that 3 out of 4 qualifications don't exist. So it's like a job description for a superhero. Like, you know, in order to apply, you have to be able to fly in the air and see through walls and have amazing strength. I mean, like, 3 out of 4 don't even exist.
Yeah. So where to begin, like, with this? This is in Canada. Again, why does Canada have to make international news for being morons? This is what's becoming very sad about our country. Why are we constantly in international news for our prime minister announcing that men who have sex with men can donate blood? And by the way, if you go to university here, you can apply for this job only if you're a woman or two-spirit or transgender. Why are we acting like such idiots here? Why can't we just stop and say, okay, this is silly. This has gone too far. We believe in equality. We believe in the most qualified person should get this research chair. Joe Biden, I mean, sorry, but the states are doing the same thing. Joe Biden, when he needed to replace the seat on the Supreme Court bench, he said, I don't know who it's going to be, but I know she's going to be a black woman. And it's like, why? Why are you pre-committed to superficial things about a person when it comes to their competency to do a job? I mean, we just don't even care anymore about character or about qualifications or about education. We care about identity politics.
Yeah, you've answered your own question, Tim, where the answer why is they're committed to critical race theory, to critical theory, which is always the promotion, which is always the promotion of some fictitious victim group. And the reality of it is they do not care about merits any longer. And this is going to affect our country. That teacher might not be able to read, but apparently he or the wishy she is going to get the job because of that. And so we've been over it. It's the same answer on this one. All three of these stories are the same answer. We're committed to critical theory as a nation, and we need to shake our heads and get out of it.
Yeah, these it's true. These are all connected because we're erasing reality. We're erasing connection to laurels or merit. We are making every decision based on a lens of identity politics and critical theory. We're not making a decision on Ryerson because of what he did or didn't do. That's irrelevant. We're looking at it through the lens of him being a white Christian man. So he's out. We're looking at research chair positions for men. Well, that's patriarchy and hegemony. So they're out. We're looking at discriminatory blood donor policies. So we can't discriminate against immoral people. So that's out. This is the way everything, and you say it's going to affect society. Could this affect the operating room? Yes, when it comes to tainted blood. Could this affect the quality of the research right at the university? Yes. Could this affect all manner of competency trades in our nation? Yes. This is a national downgrade, and it will lead to destruction, poverty, and loss. This is not the way to build a nation. This is the way to tear down a nation.
And just to help our listeners kind of contextualize this a little bit, could you imagine if Waterloo had have done the exact opposite and said, this chair position is only available to men, only available to white men, only available to those who would only have sex with the opposite sex. There is no possibility of these types of policies swinging in both directions. It will always be left to the committee, to the hiring chair, to go back and correct their own imagined or their own presupposed desired outcome. You know, it's no longer, you know, this person would be good for the job. It is, what wrongs have we committed for the last century, of which I don't really know that much about because I wasn't here for the last 100 years.
And I'm also not good at reading or analyzing any of it.
Right, because I've been hired based upon only my skin color and my gender, which, again, how do the same people say that there is no sex? Like,
Matt Walsh is going to answer that question for us, and I look forward to What is a Woman coming out with the Daily Wire. Yeah. Everybody should watch that when it comes out.
That's right.
Yeah, Matt Walsh is a plain speak hero.
To the Daily Wire doing an advertisement on our podcast so that we get paid for you saying stuff like about that. But
that's true.
Matt
I'll DM Walsh him.
Would be a great.
Yeah,
would be a great catch. All right, Tim, important meeting, and so need to step away from our wonderful podcast today that you stayed at home to make sure we shot.
And Mike, I want to make you better hit the fairway on the first tee. Okay. Don't embarrass us out there with your Liberty Coalition gear on.
Okay. If I don't hit the fairway, I'll take the Liberty Coalition Canada gear off.
Thank you, everybody. Thanks for joining us today on Liberty Dispatch. Join us again next week. Tune in to everything that's coming out and share the show. But we appreciate everybody being with us. Send us feedback at info@libertycoalitioncanada.com, and we will begin to interact with your hot takes and your cultural analysis on our shows in the future. So send us your juicy takes so that we can have fun with them and Mike can make fun of them. But
You reminded me of something, Tim.
What?
We're going to be doing a new show that you're going to be hosting that I'm happy to talk about a little bit here right before I shoot par. And the person who's driving laughs hysterically. We're going to be starting a new show called Liberty Lounge.
Yes.
Where you are going to be the host of bringing all of our personalities together. So,
which is a tall task to have everybody in the same conversation. Like,
yeah, but I really love that you're going to be able to handle it really well. It's going to be incredibly funny because it's not going to be, it's going to be over, you know, events that, you know, we need to spend hours with our listeners as they go through a kind of a live event. It's going to be whenever you want to talk about something. So we're not going to be rushed. We're going to enjoy ourselves.
Unless Mike's got a tea time, of course. Then
Mike's got a tea time. But then everybody will be left over for you guys to listen to. So I'm looking forward to Liberty Lounge. I think you're planning on shooting it once a month to start. And I'm glad that you're doing that. Of course, I'm developing my open mic with Michael Thiessen. That's just because the interviews are coming. I've interviewed Bodie Bauckham this week. We're going to be hearing that soon.
Fantastic.
I'm interviewing an American fighter pilot. We're going to be putting that out in the next coming weeks. So lots of different stuff happening. And everybody, the Dispatch, Tim and I are going to be handing that off more and more to Andrew DiBartolo and Matthew Pollack. But you're going to be in good hands for the Dispatch. We're going to jump on the firing squad regularly. And then Tim and I are developing these shows. So lots of variety, different formats for people to listen.
That's going to be a lot of fun. Again, thanks for joining us, and send us your feedback. But till we speak again, until Mike's done on the links, we'll catch you next time on Liberty Dispatch.
Thanks for tuning in to Liberty Dispatch, a united front to restore liberty and justice in Canada. Please subscribe to our podcast and Rumble channel, as well as visit our website at www.libertycoalitioncanada.com.